Well, we're going to continue on with our history of the Middle East, biblical history of the Middle East, and just found out this week that we talked about a militant group that had been holed up in a refugee camp outside of Tripoli, Lebanon, and why the Lebanese army was attacking them. Well, come to find out, I thought they were Hezbollah-supported militants. Turns out that they're Al-Qaeda. So we've known that there's an Al-Qaeda influence in Israel and all of this part of the world, but come to find out, these militants are supported by Al-Qaeda. So that's kind of another little hook into the larger picture of this whole affair. Well, now, so brought you up to date on that. What else do you remember happening in Israel this week? Go ahead, Briggs.
What's this with Israel going to cede the Golan Heights to Syria if Syria gets away from Iran?
Yeah, that was amazing. Now, the Golan Heights, and I'll show you a picture here in a second about the importance of the Golan Heights, and I'll show you where it is, and I'm sure you've heard of it and not known exactly what they're talking about. But over the years, since 1967, which the other major event in Israel this last week was the 40th anniversary of the Six-Day War, began June the 5th, 1967. After those 6 days, the picture of the Middle East in the land of Israel changed immensely, and we've been dealing with the consequences of that ever since for one reason or another. One of the pieces of land that they took was the Golan Heights. So over the last 40 years, there have been times where, for the sake of peace, maybe a prime minister would offer that back to Syria as a peace offering that, you know, we'll give it back. So this latest offering from last week was that Prime Minister Ehud Olmert offered that Golan Heights back to Syria if they would renounce their ties with Iran. It's well known that Iran fully supports Syria in many ways, and it's not a healthy relationship for the rest of that part of the world. So for them to cut ties with Iran is, I don't think that'll happen. But I'll show you what's so important about the Golan Heights. Also, 40th anniversary of the Six-Day War. Let me show you here kind of what happened was that after 1967, Israel controlled the Golan Heights, and this piece of land right here at the northeast part of Israel. Here's the Sea of Galilee. Over here is Syria. So they took this part of land from Syria. They also took the border strip with Lebanon. Right here with Lebanon, they took a strip that was kind of a buffer zone several miles wide along the Lebanese border in 1967 to put a buffer zone there. Then they also took the West Bank, occupied the West Bank of the Jordan River, and the Gaza Strip that we talked about last week. It's interesting that just yesterday there was another attempt by Hamas. They left the Gaza Strip, came into Israel, and ambushed another Israeli military patrol to try to kidnap another soldier. They failed. They wound up, most of them got killed. So that didn't work again. But what happened was that from 1967 till the summer of 2000, they held that Lebanese border strip. But in the summer of 2000, again, for the sake of peace, Ehud Barak, the prime minister then, pulled out of that Lebanese buffer zone. They said, okay, you know, world opinion is that we shouldn't be in this piece of land. It belongs to Lebanon, so we're going to get out for the sake of peace. He also, at that time, wanted to return the Golan Heights to Syria, but he was outvoted by the parliament, the Israeli parliament. Yes?
Is the Golan Heights where one of the cities of refuge was located?
I'm not sure. I don't know. Can't remember. Probably was.
Golan was one of the three cities of refuge.
The others, I think. I don't know. I'd have to look. Good. Does anybody know if a city of refuge was located in Golan? Can't remember. If you know your cities of refuge, look it up, please. And then in August of 2005, That's when Ariel Sharon, prime minister, exited all of the people out of Gaza Strip. So he turned it totally over to the Palestinians. He took all the Jewish settlers out, all the military posts, everything out of the Gaza Strip. Really upset a lot of the people because the Jewish people had built a lot of infrastructure, homes, businesses, agriculture in the Gaza Strip. He pulled them all out and turned it all over to the Palestinians. So that was in 2005. Well, what was the outcome of that? Well, last year in July, an Israeli soldier named Gilad Shalit was kidnapped by Hamas. They crossed into Israel, ambushed a patrol, killed two soldiers, and kidnapped Shalit and took him back into the Gaza Strip. Israel entered the Gaza Strip trying to find him and killed a lot of the militants, and a lot of has been going on ever since. Less than a month later, Hezbollah up in Lebanon thought, well, that worked pretty good for them. We'll do the same thing. They cross over the border from Lebanon into Israel. They kidnap two Israeli soldiers and go back. And that's when we saw Israel enter Lebanon last year in the Lebanese war against Hezbollah. As of today, those three soldiers are still being held by Hamas and Hezbollah. They haven't been released yet. So what is the possibility of turning over the Golan Heights and that remaining a peaceful venture? It's not going to work. World opinion is that, well, you know, Israel, maybe you better turn these lands back over. You know, you took them, but maybe you need to give them back. Maybe that'll bring peace. No, probably not. The track record is not good. So here's what's so important about the Golan Heights. Here's the Sea of Galilee. Here's the Golan Heights. Here's Syria over here. Here's Mount Hermon right on the border of Syria and Lebanon. Mount Hermon is the highest mountain in this region. It supplies the source water for the Jordan River. The Jordan River forms up here, flows down here to the Sea of Galilee, and then all the way along the border of Israel and Jordan. Sea of Galilee holds 25 to 30% of Israel's fresh drinking water. So the importance is this. Here's a picture from the Sea of Galilee looking north, and here's Mount Hermon. And so the Jordan River forms over here to this area and flows into the Sea of Galilee. All this area over here is the Golan Heights. From that point in this region, you can look out over Syria almost all the way to Damascus. And turning to the south, you can see almost all over the entire breadth of Israel. So militarily, it is huge in a strategic location for the military, in that it's an enormous buffer zone between Israel and Syria. Also, from that point is a great missile launching site for Syria to be able to set up there. They can launch into Israel anything they want. So that's why it's so strategic militarily. Strategic politically, who owns the Golan Heights can control Israel's drinking water. They can shut it off from that up in there. So that's what's so important about the Golan Heights. That's why Israel took it back in 1967. And so that's why it's been so tough to give up. So again, will this offer come to fruition? Don't know. Will Syria say, oh yeah, yeah, we'll renounce ties and just to get the land back and then just start hitting Israel immediately? That would be more likely. Or even say, yeah, we want our land back, and then secretly keep the ties with Iran was probably what would be happening. But again, it is Israel saying, you know, we're willing to try these things for peace and to do these things, but they never hold because of the problems that we've had for 4,000 years. So, any questions about that? Well, that's the whole, one of the whole points is, no, you don't do that. Don't do it. Because that is a possibility. Sure is. So, well, let's continue on with this happened last week too. Iranian President Ahmadinejad was kind of celebrating the 40th anniversary of the Six-Day War also. And he said that Hezbollah began the countdown in its war with the Israeli Defense Forces last summer. With Allah's help, the countdown button to this regime's Israel's destruction has been pushed by the hands of Lebanon and Palestine's children. By Allah's will, we will witness the destruction of this regime in the near future thanks to the endeavors of Palestinian and Lebanese fighters. It's no secret what this Iranian president feels about Israel. He's ready for them to be gone. That's why I believe that they are working on a nuclear weapon, and that I believe they'll use it. He doesn't care. He wants Israel gone at all costs, and he's willing to do it. So that's another reason I think we got to keep an eye on this guy, because, you know, it was so interesting. After Hitler came to power, everybody was going, how could we have missed all the signs and the signals? Well, I'm going, well, here's this guy. He's doing the exact same thing. So better keep an eye on him, too. So just a little brief thing from last week. Well, from last week that we were talking about, we saw the lines of Noah, his descendants. Noah had three sons, Shem, Ham, and Japheth. From Ham came the descendants of the Canaanites. Ham had a son named Canaan, and his descendants were known as the Canaanites. He had another son called Mizraim, or Mizraim, who through his line came the Philistines. So that was all from the line of Ham. We wound up last week by looking at the line of Shem, another one of Noah's sons. And from the line of Shem, we followed the descendancy down to a man named Abram. If you'll turn to chapter 11, Genesis 11, we'll kind of pick up there from last week. And, you know, some of all of this, you know, is kind of detailed. And what I'm going to do is to point out the important scripture, because once you line it out step by step methodically and see what God has been saying all along, all of a sudden all this stuff starts just falling into place and making so much more sense. But without this basis here, it just doesn't work. And so we're going to go through this step at a time. Yes? It was. Good. Way to go. Golan was a city of refuge. Thanks. So see, we learn together. So Genesis 11, 10 through 26 gives the account of the sons and descendants of Shem. And it goes from Shem to Arphaxad to Shelah and all the way down to 24. Nahor gave birth to a man named Terah. And Terah was the father of Abram. Okay, so we're following that line, the line of Shem, all the way down to Abram. Well, what happened with Abram in verse chapter 11, verse 31? It says, Terah took his son Abram, his grandson Lot, son of Haran, and his daughter-in-law Sarai, the wife of his son Abram, and together they set out from Ur of the Chaldeans to go to Canaan. But when they came to Haran, they settled there. Terah lived 205 years, and he died in Haran. So where is all of this happening? Well, here's a brief map, an overview of this part of the world. And right over here is Ur, Ur of the Chaldeans. Right here is the Persian Gulf. This river right here is the Euphrates. The top river is the Tigris. Here is Babylon. This what Babylon and Baghdad, of course, weren't there in the time of Abram and Terah, but I just wanted to show you where in location all this is happening. And so it says that they were setting out for the land of Canaan. Well, probably what they did is they traveled in those days was to follow a river so you'd have drinking water the entire way. So probably what they did was set out from Ur and come up the Euphrates River and come into here, and their intention was to peel off and come down into this land where all of these people were, the Philistines, Amorites, the Canaanites, all of these families, that just like it says in the Bible. Well, they came into, there's a river that peels off of the Euphrates that goes back up into the mountains here, and the side of Haran. So probably what they did, they came up the Euphrates, they stopped in Haran for a while, and that's where Terah died. So this is the whole scene of where you are, and this is the last point that we see Abram's father. Okay, so that's where the story picks up in Genesis 12. It says, the Lord had said to Abram, leave your country, your people, and your father's household, and go to the land I will show you. So they're in Haran, and he says, I want you to leave this place, but I'm going to show you where to go. And then he says to Abram, I will make you into a great nation, and I will bless you. I will make your name great, and you will be a blessing. I will bless those who bless you, and whoever curses you, I will curse. And all the peoples on earth will be blessed through you. So Abram left, as the Lord had told him, and Lot went with him. Abram was 75 years old when he set out from Haran. He took his wife Sarai, his nephew Lot, all the possessions they had accumulated, and the people they had acquired in Haran, and they set out for the land of Canaan, and they arrived there. Abram traveled through the land as far as the site of the great tree of Moreh at Shechem. Now, then, as you're reading in the newspaper of current events and everything, there's two important cities in the West Bank that are controlled by the Palestinians. One of them is Nablus, the other one is Ramallah. Those are the two. Ramallah is sort of the capital of the West Bank. But the other town, Nablus, is modern-day Shechem. Okay, so the ruins of Shechem are still there also. So this is 4,000 years ago, and the ruins are still there. So he went to Shechem. At that time, who was in this land? The Canaanites. You know, the descendants of Ham had moved to this territory, and that's where they settled. So they knowingly going into this land where all the Canaanites were. The Lord appeared to Abram and said, "To your offspring I will give this land." So he built an altar there to the Lord who had appeared to him. From there he went on toward the hills east of Bethel and pitched his tent with Bethel on the west and Ai on the east, and that's just northwest of Jerusalem. There he built an altar to the Lord and called on the name of the Lord. Then Abram set out and continued toward the Negev. And the Negev is a desert in southern Israel. That's the desert region of the Negev. It means to the south. So that's where he's traveling. So he's coming in from the north, all the way into the land of Canaan, and he winds up down in here into the southern part of the land we now know as Israel. The Canaanites were in this land. God makes him a promise. He says, "To your offspring I will give this land." So that's the first hint that God is doing something with Abraham, or Abram at this point, and it has to do with land. Now then, who offspring is he talking about at this point? And he doesn't know yet. Right now he's saying, this is for your offspring. Okay? So keep that in mind, because it's very methodical how this works out. So at this point, we don't know what offspring it is. You know, if you're just reading this for the first time, you don't know who he's talking about. He's just saying, Abram, you're going to have offspring, and I'm going to give this land to them. Okay? That's real important. Now then, what are some of the promises that he gives Abram right there in those first verses? What are some of the promises? You're going to have the children. What? The land. You're going to make you into a great nation. All the world will be blessed through you. If those people who bless you, I'm going to bless them. If those who come against you, I will curse them. Protection for Abram. He's going to make his name great. He's seen as the father of three faiths. I think he's made Abram's name great. Okay? So a lot is packed in just those few verses that God is saying, Abram, you follow me, and here's what I'm going to do for you. It's going to include all these blessings, descendants, great nation. Everyone's going to be blessed through you, and I'm going to give you some land to your offspring. So a lot is packed in just those few verses. Remember who was there, the Canaanites, and he's giving this land to his offspring. So let's turn over to Genesis 15. Genesis 15 says, "After this, the word of the Lord came to Abram in a vision. Do not be afraid, Abram. I'm your shield, your very great reward. But Abram said, O sovereign Lord, what can you give me since I remain childless, and the one who will inherit my estate is Eliezer of Damascus? And Abram said, You have given me no children, so a servant in my household will be my heir." Now then, they just came from the region of Haran. Damascus wasn't very far away, so probably what happened was he picked people up as he traveled. It says that, you know, they accumulated people, servants and things like that. Probably this Eliezer was probably one of the lead servants, probably took care of Abram's accounts and possessions and managed the other people. He was very important. So Abram had a problem. He said, God, how are you going to bless me because I don't even have a son to pass all this on to? He says, in fact, all I have is this servant Eliezer from Damascus. He's the only one that's even close to being an heir. So how are you going to bless me? He had a real tough question here. Then the word of the Lord came to him. This man will not be your heir, but a son coming from your own body will be your heir. He took him outside and said, look up at the heavens and count the stars, if indeed you can count them. Then he said to him, so shall your offspring be. He said, Abram, just look up at the stars. He said, that's how many kids you're going to have. Your descendants is going to be beyond count. So don't worry about it. And it's all going to start with a son from your own body. So that was the promise. Abram believed the Lord, and he credited it to him as righteousness. Now, we could spend 2 or 3 weeks just on that right there. God has not changed in his requirements for people and their faith toward him. He says that Abram believed, and God counted him as being righteous. He hasn't changed. Abram had nothing to do with performance, with works, or anything. He believed, and God gave him righteousness as righteous. He hasn't changed with us either, with his son Jesus Christ. We don't bring our works, we don't bring our efforts, we don't bring anything into it except I believe on your son Jesus Christ, and God counts it as, to us as being righteous. God hasn't changed. He hasn't changed. So it's always been that way. He also said to him, I am the Lord who brought you out of Ur of the Chaldeans to give you this land to take possession of it. Okay, here it is again, number two. He's saying, I've brought you into this land, and I'm going to let you take possession of this land. Okay? But Abram said, O sovereign Lord, how can I know that I will gain possession of it? Are you sure? And how am I going to know that this land is going to be mine? But so the Lord said to him, bring me a heifer, a goat, and a ram, each 3 years old, along with a dove and a young pigeon. Abram brought all these to him, cut them in two, and arranged the halves opposite each other. The birds, however, he did not cut in half. So Abram cuts these animals in half, lays them side by side. The blood forms a stream in between them. And this is a blood covenant that was begun. Now then, here's what is the interesting part that happens right here. As the sun was setting, Abram fell into a deep sleep, and a thick and dreadful darkness came over him. Then the Lord said to him, know for certain that your descendants will be strangers in a country not their own, and they will be enslaved and mistreated 400 years. But I will punish the nation they serve as slaves, and afterward they will come out with great possessions. You, however, will go to your fathers in peace and be buried at a good old age. In the fourth generation, your descendants will come back here, for the sin of the Amorites has not yet reached its full measure. When the sun had set and darkness had fallen, a smoking fire pot with a blazing torch appeared and passed between the pieces. On that day, the Lord made a covenant with Abram and said, to your descendants, I give this land from the river of Egypt to the great river, the Euphrates, the land of the Kenites, Kenizzites, Kadmonites, Hittites, Perizzites, Rephaites, Amorites, Canaanites, Girgashites, and Jebusites. Who are those people? Where have we heard that before? Turn back to chapter 10. Look at chapter 10, verse 15. These are the descendants of the son of Ham, Canaan. Ham, Canaan, and all of his descendants in verse 15 are who he is talking about right there with this covenant with Abram. That's where we've heard those names before. And he says, to your descendants I give this land, the land of these people. So again, he's saying, there's land involved, there's people here, but your descendants are going to inherit this land. They're going to possess it. So a lot of things are happening right here. God makes a covenant with Abram. He walks in between these blood pieces, these pieces of animal, through the blood. God does. Where's Abram in all this? He's sound asleep. Abram cut the animals, then he fell into deep sleep. God walked through the animals through the blood. So whose covenant is this? God's. What did Abraham bring to it? Nothing. Nothing. That's what God does when he makes a covenant, a blood covenant. It is totally from God. Totally. Nothing that we can do to add to it. We can't do a single thing. It is totally from God. Yes? He brought belief. He brought belief. You know, you tell me what to do, I'll do it, and then you can put me to sleep. You know, that's basically what he did. But God is totally on the hook for this covenant. God does not go back on covenants. God never lies. God never changes. God never breaks a promise. If he makes a covenant, he never breaks it. If you're in a legal contract with somebody, it's always up for grabs. You know, people can break contracts. If it's a covenant, God will not break it. The covenant of his son, Jesus Christ, he will not break that covenant. We may abuse it. We may reject it. But God will never do that. He did the same thing with Abram. We don't bring it into anything. We don't bring anything into the covenant of Jesus Christ except our belief. Abram wasn't either. He was sound asleep through all this. It was totally God's doing. And God said, I'm going to work with your offspring, and it's going to be inheriting some land, and it is through my covenant that I'm going to make this happen. So two or three things here. He tells him, know for certain that your descendants will be strangers in a country not their own. So who is that? Who's that country? Egypt. The Israelites were put into bondage in Egypt for four generations, 430 years. God said, for four generations you're going to be down there. And then once they are released from bondage, then I will bring them back to this land, and at that time they're going to possess it. When they leave that foreign country, they're going to come out with great many possessions. What happened when the Israelites left Egypt? The Egyptians gave them all their gold and silver and jewelry and precious stones and everything, just anything to get them out of our country. We can't stand the gnats and the frogs and the blood, and just get them out. So they gave them all this stuff. The Israelites left with these possessions, like God said, 400 years before or more before it happened. Yes.
Biblically, even, because they had this land, all except for the little parcel of Israel.
Yep.
And the Jews argue, no, it's just that we haven't got the whole of the land yet.
That's right. And we're going to touch on that probably next week now, but one of the arguments is what she's saying is that some of the Muslims claim that they are descendants of the people who were in this land. And so we were there first. Okay? Well, we'll see next week that that can't happen. It's impossible. Because they make one claim and it contradicts their other claim. So we'll get into that. But she's right. There's a lot going on underneath that doesn't make sense until you look right here and add it, piece it together. So the Israelites will be in a distant land. In four generations they will come back here. And he says, for the sin of the Amorites has not yet reached its full measure. And again, I could spend quite a while on this. To me, it's amazing to know that God knows exactly where a culture or a society is going. He's already seen the Amorites and where they're headed. And he knows at the exact point in time, four generations later, that their sin will reach a full measure. Now, why would he continue to let them do that for four generations, for 400 years? Why would he do that?
Because he's merciful.
Because he's merciful. We don't know. It doesn't say, but there may have been people who came to a faith in God of the Amorites. We don't know that. Evidently, he still saw something happening in these Amorite people that he wanted to give them 400 more years. So the mercy of God is incredible to see that he says, Abram, you know, all this is going to happen. You're not even going to be here for a while, your descendants, because I've got to work with these folks for a while. But at some point, their sin is going to reach a full measure. And at some point, I know that from that point on, there will be no good coming out of that. God already knows. He's already seen every culture and every kingdom that's ever lived. And he knows the outcome of it. He knows where the United States is heading. He knows where the Amorites were heading. He knows the outcome of all nations. So it's amazing that he says, Abram, this is all going to happen in 400 years, but you're going to be gone because I'm still working with these people. Merciful God. Merciful God. Unbelievable. Okay, so Genesis 16, we see that, of course, we know the story that Abram and Sarai, get impatient because Abram is looking for a son to be his heir. It's not happening. And God has said, I'm going to give you a son from your own body. Well, so maybe we need to take the action. Maybe we need to do something to make this happen, because, I mean, we're getting on up in the years, and Abram is 86 years old, and, you know, it just seems like we might ought to do something. So Sarah says, why don't you take my maidservant Hagar, have a child with her, and at least we'll have a son. So that's what they do. They have a son, and it says, let's start with verse 7. Hagar is dismissed from Sarah because Sarah starts mistreating her out of jealousy. Now that you have a son with my husband Abram, well, I don't like that. So Hagar leaves, and out in the desert, verse 7 says, the angel of the Lord found Hagar near a spring in the desert. It was the spring that is beside the road to Shur. And he said, Hagar, servant of Sarai, where have you come from and where are you going? I'm running away from my mistress, Sarai, she answered. Then the angel of the Lord told her, go back to your mistress and submit to her. The angel added, I will so increase your descendants that they will be too numerous to count. Well, that's amazing. Here's the angel of the Lord saying, Hagar, you know, go back. Everything's going to be okay. The descendants that are about to come through this are going to be too numerous to count. Well, where have we heard that promise before? That's what God was telling Abram. Your descendants. Well, here's a son of Abram through Hagar, and he's telling the same thing. It's all going to work out. Their descendants are going to be here, and he's telling this to Hagar. The angel of the Lord also said to her, you are now with child, and you will have a son. You shall name him Ishmael, for the Lord has heard your misery. So Hagar, you're going to have a son, and his name is going to be Ishmael. Abram's first son was Ishmael. Abram was 86 years old. What are the characteristics of this son going to be? He will be a wild donkey of a man. His hand will be against everyone, and everyone's hand against him, and he will live in hostility toward all his brothers. So, we don't know yet who this is. We know it's Ishmael. We don't know who his descendants are, but does this sound like any kind of group of people today that we just... I mean, if you kind of look at the world as a whole, and you see what goes on in the newspaper every day, you know, not only do we have infighting among the Muslim groups, the Sunnis and the Shiites mainly, but we also have these tribal clashes going on. As we went into Afghanistan, that was what was happening, was we had to bargain with the tribal elders to make peace between the different tribes of these people to make it work. So there's a lot of things going on historically in the Arab culture that kind of stems from all this. Well, these attributes are that his descendants aren't going to get along with anybody. In fact, they're going to be fighting among themselves all this time also. So just kind of a possibility there. We'll kind of get into who these descendants are later. But here's Ishmael through the maidservant Hagar. And the first instance of Ishmael, and he's going to be blessed through Hagar with many descendants. So let's look at chapter 17. This says, when Abram was 99 years old, the Lord appeared to him and said, I'm God Almighty. Walk before me and be blameless. I will confirm my covenant between me and you and will greatly increase your numbers. So he says, I've made a covenant with you. Now I'm going to bring it to fruition. I've told you 13 years ago or more than that how my covenant's going to work. Now I'm going to let you see that I'm about to put it into effect. I'm going to carry it out. So Abram fell face down, and God said to him, as for me, this is my covenant with you. You will be the father of many nations. No longer will you be called Abram. Your name will be Abraham, for I have made you a father of many nations. I will make you very fruitful. I will make nations of you, and kings will come from you. I will establish my covenant as an everlasting covenant between me and you and your descendants after you for the generations to come, to be your God and the God of your descendants after you. The whole land of Canaan, where you are now an alien, I will give as an everlasting possession to you and your descendants after you, and I will be their God. Okay, there it is right there. Now, whose descendants is he talking about? Abraham. That's all we know right now. Right this point is that Abraham's descendants will inherit this land. And he says, all this land of Canaan I'm going to give you, and how long is it going to be for?
Forever.
Remember, when God says forever, he means it. He's the only one that can mean it. So here's the promise that's going along here. Then God said to Abraham, as for you, you must keep my covenant, you and your descendants after you, for the generations to come. This is my covenant with you and your descendants after you, the covenant you are to keep. Every male among you shall be circumcised. So he says, this is the sign of your my covenant. This is your sign that says that you're going to keep my covenant. All the males in your family, all your descendants will be circumcised. And so at the age of 13, Ishmael, it says, was circumcised. The Muslims still practice that also. Okay? So all the descendants of Abraham, by covenant, practice this sign. God also said to Abraham, this is in verse 15, as for Sarai, your wife, you are no longer to call her Sarai. Her name will be Sarah. I will bless her and will surely give you a son by her. I've been telling you all along, and I'm going to make that happen. Abraham and Sarah will have a son. He's already got a son named Ishmael from Hagar. And here's the problem. I will bless her and surely give you a son by her. I will bless her so that she will be the mother of nations. Kings of peoples will come from her. Abraham fell face down. He laughed and said to himself, will a son be born to a man 100 years old? Yep. Will Sarah bear a child at the age of 90? Yep. And so Abraham's response, because it's just incredulous, I'm 100 years old. I'm 99. I'm about to be 100. There's no way that this is going to happen. God, look, why not? I've already got a son. And he responds with, and Abraham said to God, if only Ishmael might live under your blessing. I don't see how this is going to work. We're too old. But I've already got a son. Why don't you bless Ishmael? Why don't you take this covenant through Ishmael? Logical, okay? God says, yes, but your wife Sarah will bear you a son, and you will call him Isaac. I will establish my covenant with him as an everlasting covenant for his descendants after him. So he says, no, my covenant isn't going to be with Ishmael. I promised you a son with Sarah, and I'm going to make that happen. My covenant is going to flow through Isaac, not Ishmael. But God's not going to forget Ishmael either. After all, he is a son of Abraham. He is a son. And it says, and as for Ishmael, I have heard you. I will surely bless him. I will make him fruitful and will greatly increase his numbers. He will be the father of 12 rulers, and I will make him into a great nation. But my covenant I will establish with Isaac, whom Sarah will bear to you by this time next year. And when he had finished speaking with Abraham, God went up from him. So he says, I'm going to take care of Ishmael. He's going to be blessed with nations too. He's going to be the father of 12 rulers. I'm going to take care of him. But my covenant is going to be with the son that I've promised you and Sarah, and you're going to name him Isaac. Okay? So we're going to wind up in Genesis 21. Says, now the Lord was gracious to Sarah as he had said, and the Lord did for Sarah what he had promised. Sarah became pregnant and bore a son to Abraham in his old age at the very time God had promised him. Abraham gave the name Isaac to the son Sarah bore him. When his son Isaac was 8 years old, Abraham circumcised him as God commanded him. Abraham was 100 years old when his son Isaac was born to him. Sarah said, God has brought me laughter, and everyone who hears about this will laugh with me. And she added, who would have said to Abraham that Sarah would nurse children? Yet I have borne him a son in his old age. The child grew and was weaned, and on the day Isaac was weaned, Abraham held a great feast. But Sarah saw that the son whom Hagar, the Egyptian, had borne to Abraham was mocking him. So Ishmael, for some reason, was mocking this younger son Isaac. And she said to Abraham, get rid of that slave woman and her son, for that slave woman's son will never share in the inheritance with my son Isaac. I don't like him making Isaac my son. Says, get rid of him. Get him out of here. The matter distressed Abraham greatly because it concerned his son. But God said to him, do not be so distressed about the boy and your maidservant. Listen to whatever Sarah tells you, because it is through Isaac that your offspring will be reckoned. I will make the son of the maidservant into a nation also, because he is your offspring. God's saying, don't worry about it. I'm going to take care of Ishmael too. Now then, here's one of the false teachings out there that comes from some Jews and some Christians, and it's wrong. Because I've heard it said that Islam is the fruit of Abraham's bastard son, Ishmael. Well, that's not true. Abraham recognized his son, Ishmael, as his son. God recognized Abraham's son, Ishmael, as his offspring. And God chose to bless Ishmael also. So for us to teach, and what they're trying to do is to delegitimize Islam by saying that it was born from a bastard son of Abraham. That's just not true. So that's a false teaching that's out there. As you hear it, just, you know, that's not true. So God and Abraham both recognize Ishmael as a viable son, but God has already said, I'm going to take care of Ishmael, I'm going to do things through him, but my covenant is going to be through Isaac. Early the next morning, Abraham took some food and a skin of water and gave them to Hagar. He sent them on her shoulders and then sent her off with the boy. She went on her way and wandered in the desert of Beersheba, which is southern Israel. When the water in the skin was gone, she put the boy under one of the bushes. She got lost. It was a bad thing. The boy was crying. Verse 18, lift the boy up and take him by the hand, for I'll make him into a great nation, God says. So he's still working with Ishmael. Then God opened her eyes and she saw a well of water. She went and filled the skin with water and gave the boy a drink. God was with the boy as he grew up. He lived in the desert and became an archer. While he was living in the desert of Paran, his mother got a wife for him from Egypt. So here's where Ishmael got started. As he grew up, he was sent out from Abraham and Sarah and Isaac. Hagar and Ishmael were sent out into the desert and wandering, and he grew up, and we'll catch up with him later also. So again, God has recognized both Ishmael and Isaac. Ishmael, I'm going to bless and make him the father of many nations. He will have numerous descendants. But my covenant with the land of the Canaanites will flow through Isaac, your offspring, the son that was promised to Abraham and Sarah. So that's where we're going to leave it today. And next week we're going to see the great diversion between Judaism and Islam. Yes?
So when he says you get the land from the Nile to the Euphrates, that was Isaac?
Yep. And I'll show you a map of the promised land. We looked at this not too long ago, and he sets out the borders of this land in numbers, and tells what the borders are. And it's a greatly larger piece than we know as Israel today. So are they going to get it? Well, he said it's an everlasting deal. So yeah.
Genesis 25.
Yep. Right.
And they lived in hostility toward all their brothers.
That's right. The prophecy is always true. Yep. We'll look at that one next week, because there's a lot in those groups of verses. Yep.
Abraham and Hagar were married, were they not?
No.
Well, it says right here in 16 that Sarah, his wife, took her Egyptian maidservant Hagar and gave her to her husband to be his wife.
for the evening.
Well,
you make
what you said a minute ago is not true then, because you said he's not a bastard.
He's not. Well, but here's what'll, because over in chapter 25, it talks about Abraham left everything he owned to Isaac, but while he was still living, he gave gifts to the sons of his concubines. So that was different than a marriage. Abraham and Sarah were husband and wife. She gave her to him temporarily to bear a son. So you fulfill the role of the wife, but she was still considered a concubine. Yeah, good point, though. I mean, there's all the ancient patriarchs. They all had multiple wives and or concubines. They did. So, another hand over here.
I think the interesting lesson there is when Abraham
That's right. That's right. As the comedian Jeff Allen says, do you want to be right or do you want to be happy? So. Let's have a word of prayer and head out for the day. Dearest Lord, we thank you so much that you have given us your word and that we see you working your covenant relationship with your people, the Jewish people, and your covenant relationship through your son, Jesus Christ, with the whole world. We thank you that it is your covenant because, God, if it was ours, we are changing, we are unstable, we are always breaking our promise, and we know that you will never break your promise. You never lie, you never change. God, we thank you that it is you that has made the blood covenant with Abraham and through your son, Jesus Christ, to bring salvation to the world. We thank you for your word that sustains us through all that we go through. In your son's name, amen. Good to see you.